Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, wherever and whenever you are listening. Thank you for joining the show. You are now rocking with the best. As always, we gave a big shout out to our Minister of Social Information, Brother B. Always got to show the homies some love because of his work behind the scenes, making us look good on Twitter, IG, and Facebook. So if you haven't already, check out his work. It's honestly really good. And back once again, Double Trouble is in the house. The Get Busy Boys, Akil Thomas and Elijah Roberts. What's happening, youngins? Akil, what up?
Just another day. Had practice today. Things are good. It's getting really sunny out, and the weather's been amazing here. So life is really good right now.
Elijah?
I've just been, I'm still at home. I've been doing a lot of work to get the backyard ready for summer, building the barbecue, building some furniture, just helping my mom out at home. So
you're building a barbecue?
He's building a barbecue.
Buy a barbecue, and then you got to put it all together.
Well, how long does it take?
Well, it's not easy. Clearly, you've never built a barbecue.
How long does it take?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I built the chairs. I built the fireplace, and I got to build the barbecue next.
You believe that he did all that on his own?
Akil? Obviously not, but whatever.
Can we get some photo proof?
All right, I got you. You know I take care of things at home. You know
I know you do. I know you do. I got confidence in you, but you know, Akil, he's smirking over there.
Who do you think's like room would be more clean, Elijah's or mine?
I can see yours being more clean. I can honestly see that. Just because you're like, you're on that, that pretty boy vibe. Elijah is probably a guy that just throws his clothes on the floor and just goes to sleep.
He has dinner from like 2 weeks ago underneath his bed. Yeah, ate like half the plate.
Easy there. Yeah. You know, my room's not the cleanest, but I don't leave food laying around like you do. And, you know, Akil doesn't really know how to do anything other than play hockey and... that's about it, really. So,
Elijah, you ran out of gas on the way home from practice one day.
I did, actually. I'm going to blame this on my dad, and I know he's listening.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when I was younger, my dad would drive with the gas super low mm-hmm. and just push it to where he's got to go and sick. Then get gas after. So I started doing that when I was driving, and I was on my way home from practice and I ran out of gas and I had to call my teammate Brady Johnson to come get some gas that I could put in my car.
How come you didn't call Akil?
He was busy and he doesn't care enough to stop what he's doing to come
wow.
help me.
Wow. So
you're right.
You're telling me he left you stranded out there by yourself.
He didn't care.
Brady lives right beside him. That's why he called him.
No.
Out of the other side of the city.
I feel like the story was Elijah called Akil. Akil said, I'm pretty busy. He's like, bro, I got no gas. Like, I'm stuck here. Elijah, I'm busy. I'll talk to you later. Call Brady. And that's what he did. Then Brady helped him up. And then is that kind of like
you're funny, man.
Is that it's a scenario I have in my head.
That's exactly what happened.
All right. Elijah, I know you have some other stuff that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So DMX obviously passed away. At first there was a lot of fake news saying that he passed away when he didn't really, which is kind of sickening how people would spread that rumor. But you know, he did pass away, and I'm not big in old school rap, but DMX was somebody that I listened to. And if you go to any junior hockey arena, a lot of those players don't know DMX, but you're always going to hear X Gonna Give It To You or Rough Riders album or anthem, sorry, in the warm-up tracks. And you know, he really was a big influence on the rap game in the world. And one of my favorite moments when I kind of look back at him is his concerts. His concerts always looked like there was a billion people there, and he always had the crowd singing his lyrics, rocking with him, and truly, like, rap wouldn't be where it is right now if it wasn't for DMX.
Yeah, well, he's definitely, you know, going to be on the Mount Rushmore, you know, and I think for, you know, he's my generation of hip hop, and, you know, when he first came out, it was just like, he was just kicked in the door, and you never heard anything like that. And, you know, it's just one of those things where when you hear about his story and how he came up and being homeless and on the streets and to becoming one of the biggest rap stars of the 90s, it's just totally inspirational. And, you know, he suffered through a lot of addiction problems, and, you know, it caught up to him. And it's sad, but nobody's perfect. One of the best moments to know about DMX and the person that he was is when Aaliyah passed away, and him and Aaliyah were really close. Aaliyah is an R&B singer of the 90s who also passed away early in their career. And he had this heartfelt message to her, and you could just see the pain in his face. And, you know, and that's kind of like one of the themes of DMX, was just fighting through pain. And you heard it in his music, and you saw it in his face, and you saw the passion when he was on stage. And, you know, he's definitely going to be missed. And, you know, I know last week on our show, I was talking about the time when he kind of ghosted my radio show like 3 times in a row. And I honestly was petty and upset and stuff like that, but never deny how great of an artist DMX is. And you guys should know more than anybody that you hear a DMX song in the arena, that thing is hyped up.
So Kwame, you mentioned, you know, he battled with addiction and stuff. And I think back to, like, you know, Juice WRLD, one of my favorite rappers, and, you know, Mac Miller and Lil Peep, yep, and just a lot of celebrities, a lot of people with, you know, a lot of fans and a lot of, you know, wealth, and like what it seems like a great life, kind of deal with that same thing. And I know, you know, just you being in the radio industry, like, you know, a lot of people like that. Like, why would you say it's such a prevalent issue?
I think it's, you know, addiction has nothing to do with rich, poor, black, white. Addiction is addiction. And, you know, some people just can't fight that, be it if it's chemicals, be it if it's recreational drugs. And I think a lot of the time when you have that sort of celebrity, it's just like an athlete who has a major injury and he starts to take some sort of pain medication, and they just start getting so used to that, and that becomes that substitute. And I think sometimes celebrities and people in general just get to a point in their life where they need that type of substance to take them away from the pain that's within them, that they, you know, they're fighting demons, and they just, you know, that's the only way they can feel to escape.
I think a lot for celebrities too. A lot of these celebrities become famous when they're young.
Yes.
Look at like Justin Bieber, Mike Tyson, some of these athletes and artists and other celebrities, they become celebrities when they're young. And there's a lot of bad people who will try and get you to do things. And when you have all the money and the power in the world to try things and you have people telling you to do it, I think that's how a lot of people can get involved with it. And like, even like Akil can probably attest, when he scored his goal, there's a lot of positive message, but I'm sure there was like some Russians or Americans with hate messages, and that can resort to people going and taking drugs and getting into the wrong things.
All right, boys, we've got a great guest coming up, Megan Shaka from Statleets. She's going to break it down, statistics and the women's game, and we're gonna have a really cool conversation with her. So you know, we're dedicating this show to DMX, so like, let's get into it. And yeah, thank you for joining the show. We'll be right back. All right, our next guest, I will start off by quoting her. She says this, not me: "I don't want to be the GM. I want to own the team." Those are the words of a boss, not a boss, a boss. She was named Ontario Chamber of Commerce Top Young Entrepreneurs of the Year in 2018. The Hockey News has her as the top 100 people of power and influence. She is a hockey analyst and co-founder of Statleets, Soul Brothers, Soul Sisters. Please, please welcome Megan Chayka.
Perfect. Yes, there thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining. Again, you know, I'm going to say the name and I knew I was going to mess it up, but I really
you got it.
I think we could take it back to the Zulu Nation and call you Shaka, Megan Shaka. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Fair enough.
Thank you for joining us. And I just want to start off from the very beginning of, you know, what is Statleets and, you know, what is it? How did it get started and what it's all about?
Yeah, I guess from my perspective too, I didn't really think too that I'd work in hockey, to be honest. I was always really big into baseball. I was a pitcher. I'm really tall, so I played a ton of basketball. I'm a huge Toronto Raptors fan. So that's what I spent most of like my childhood and youth, like following, studying, learning about. And as you know, baseball and basketball have a ton of analytics. As well, I fortunately or unfortunately, I'm a very big Buffalo Bills fan. So I follow the NFL and yeah, a little bit of heartbreak there. Although it looks like there's a glimmer of hope, right? Even this year, next year. So love Josh Allen and everything that they're building there with the Bills. But yeah, I just started off as like a huge sports fan and played a lot growing up. And then took very like technical type of degrees. So I was in, you know, stats and economics, finance, business, and actually like worked for a Fortune 500 company. So I didn't really have my mind on sports at all as a career, and started just doing some work offhand in hockey, realized that there wasn't a lot of data. We were getting, you know, more clients and inbound. And so worked with a small group of people into to starting a company that was based in hockey and not only provided data, but also like insights to players and teams to be better.
Nice.
So Megan, if I'm not mistaken, you're from the Niagara region, correct?
I'm actually in Niagara right now. I was going to say I'm a couple blocks away from the Ice Dogs at this moment. So I know that's your old stomping grounds.
Okay. Yeah. So you've probably been to a couple of games the last few years, eh?
A lot of games. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go aggressive here. Who's your favorite player, Amir or Elijah?
Let's go.
No pressure. No. I mean, you know, I don't pick favorites, honestly, in hockey too. Like I like the journey, right? And I feel like a lot of people don't understand that even some of the best players, whether it's in the OHL, overseas, you know, you get to the NHL or you get to different levels and your journey begins again, right? It's like such a player development cycle that, you know, it's not really about like where you're at right now. It's sort of your work ethic and where you want to be. So I just like really love seeing that, you know, players progress. And I love the analytics portion of it too, right? Trying to make them better.
She's a boss.
So I like both of you.
She's a boss. That's a boss answer right there. Doesn't want to, you know, teeter on either way.
Well, I know she's not going to give a direct answer, but I'm sure if she looked at the analytics from when we played, my numbers would look a little bit better than Killer's. You said you've played lots of sports, and I've seen you post about the WNBA and the NBA. Do you guys plan on expanding into other sports other than hockey?
Yeah, I mean, we've done some sports. To be honest, like hockey is a really international game. Most people don't realize how many leagues there are and how busy the schedule is, especially like this year with a compressed schedule, next year with possibly the Olympics. You know, we work in 22 leagues in different ways worldwide. So we work with the league itself. We work with teams and players, agents, trainers. So, you know, we still have a lot of growth in hockey. I feel like the easiest sports to like translate from hockey are obviously like a lacrosse, right? I mean, even in Niagara, I think a lot of people play lacrosse in the summer. That's pretty normal, or a soccer. But I am also very passionate about basketball and such. So not only would I love to do the NBA, but of course the WNBA, you know, I think women's sports is like far underserved in terms of the marketing and everything that you can do in that field. So I think that will only continue to grow. And I want to be a part of it for sure.
We definitely have to talk about the women's game in just a few, but I wanted to stay on stats for just a little bit more. Is what you're doing in the stats world the future of pro sports, to the point that if you're not using some sort of stat-based analysis, you'll be left behind?
I think so. And I think the interesting thing with like more advanced analytics or more data is that like when we were talking about that player journey, right? So you go from the AHL, you're the star on your team, you're showing up on the box score every night. Now you're playing in like the AHL or the NHL and you're getting limited minutes and maybe you're not, you know, you're not contributing to like goals, assists or faceoffs. Well, how do they know how you're doing? You know, you need to have that data. You need to be able to understand like where you can improve your game, what players you want to look like, what that looks for you to break into these like big lineups. So analytics can really help not only players, but also like fans be able to follow their favorite players too and follow what they're doing, how they're progressing and how they're playing. So I think anyone who's not using more information is definitely falling behind. And I think as like technology increases, so we're seeing gaming, fantasy, gambling, sports betting, all of those platforms are all dependent on data, right? So I think it'll be just that much more of an important part of every part of sport.
So there's so many aspects of hockey and really any sport in general. Why do you think you were interested in analytics?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, hockey is a very traditional, conservative game. So I think in some ways you have to be a little disruptive to want to shake up kind of the status quo or how people normally work. But I think for us, we went in with the mindset of like, we can help you do your job better. So like you think even a scout right now, they can't go and see games, right? They're not allowed in the arenas. They can't travel. Well, how do they understand how these players are doing or who to look at in the NHL in Russia? Data helps them narrow that down so that they can like focus their time and efforts, do what they do best. So for us, it was more about just like how we can help and how we bring value, not sort of just like, you know, barging into a space and saying, you should use data because we're the best. You know, it was more like a humbling experience of like, how can we help you do your job better?
I'm sure with how much you love stats, you've seen the movie Moneyball. It's one of my favorite movies. Just the whole story behind it was pretty inspiring. Did you get your idea from that movie? And how much would you say that movie kind of helped people understand what you guys are doing?
Yeah, and actually, I just spoke at a conference this morning, the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, and Billy Beane, who's like the original Moneyball guy, that's played by Brad Pitt, spoke like shortly after on a panel. So I definitely stuck around from him. We unfortunately started our company before the Moneyball movie. So you can imagine how hard it was to pitch when we're like, just imagine, you know, this will make your team better. And then it became like, are you Brad Pitt or Jonah Hill, right? And I'm the nerd, right? I'm like the bad looking nerd is like my story. So yeah, I mean, I think Billy Beane actually even said today, like there's no business in the world that doesn't want quantified decisions, that doesn't want to say, I want this player because he's aggressive on the forecheck, is creating a lot of opportunities. Sure, he's not doing as great as he has last year, but we think he'll improve because of X, Y, Z, right? It just empowers them to make stronger, faster decisions and hopefully better organizations. So anyone that's not, you know, using that to some extent, I think not only will be replaced, but will be like lapped in terms of decision making. And yeah, love the Moneyball story. Love baseball in general too. I think it's like such a sport that uses so much data. Like they calculate everything, right? You can't really move in baseball without them knowing where you move.
How do you counter those who are so anti analytics? What is your speaking point as far as, well, that's what they did back then, this is what we need to do now and going forward in the future?
I think it's like what tools you present to people and how you talk to them, right? So you're not like talking about like statistical modeling or like confidence intervals to a player. You're showing them video of when they did good, when they did poorly, what they can improve and why that is. And you're finding that through data. but you can translate it through, you know, very simple rank diagrams, which every coach draws up since you were like five, or through video, right? Which can be very powerful too. Like, you want to watch every time, you know, you hit the crossbar on this goalie for the last 5 years. Sure, we can do that. So it becomes just like a seamless approach into, I want to make you score. I want to make you win faceoffs, whatever your goals are. How can we use data to work together instead of just saying, you know, you're bad because of this? So I like to use it in an empowering way, not in a way that, like, I think sometimes the media comes at players like, you know, you're underperforming or should be traded. And I get, like, you wouldn't like it then, right? I wouldn't like it either if someone was telling me I was doing my bad, my job bad. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just like the perspective, and you have to have like the coaches buy in, you know, you have to have other people in the organization support that, player development, sports science departments.
So interesting. You talked a lot about, you know, women and how you're inspired by seeing women's athletics grow. What women are inspiring you right now, especially in the hockey world?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great women in the hockey world. There's not a ton in like executive positions, and I think that's what needs to be changed. At the NHL, like Kim Davis, she does a great job on the diversity inclusion side as well, but just is an awesome superstar in terms of public speaking and, you know, reaching out and getting people involved in hockey. Heidi Browning, one of my friends, who she just spoke at the U of T Sports Analytics Conference on business analytics with me. Kendall Tyson, who's out in Seattle, I believe her brother's working there as well. And then her dad was like Minnesota Wild. So she's just like the ultimate, because I love golf too. And she worked for Top Golf before. So I'm almost more interested in her other background than hockey. But I think, you know, Seattle's done a really good job of hiring a lot of women, right? Cami Granato, and diversity too, not just like white women, right? Which I think is like really inspiring, and hopefully will lay you know, a groundwork and a framework of how to build success in an organization in a way that is inclusive and that shows a bit more of society than we have, you know, in the past in hockey front offices.
There aren't really too many women in sports tech. Why do you think that is?
There's not a lot of women in tech either. And that's kind of concerning to me, because you look at engineering programs and, you know, there's still like 30-40% women in school. And then it's like kind of a, you know, high drop off into tech. Funding wise too, the numbers are really grim out of, like, you know, all of the venture funds. So when people like invest in business, you know, they give businesses money, right? To like build, do whatever, you know, business development. 2% goes to women. I think it's 0.6% goes to Black women. Like, the numbers are so low that it's like it's uncomfortable for me. And we're unfunded, so we're in that, not even in that 2%. So there's a lot of change that has to be made. And there's been funds that have popped up that support, you know, different groups and these like underrepresented groups. And because I think funding and having the cash, like, hire people is kind of the first start in starting businesses, right? So there's like an automatic barrier right out of the gate for a lot of women. And then, you know, anyone else outside of the white women, 2%, it's, you know, lower and lower.
So I started like basically a clothing company at like the age of 13, and I'm 21 now, and I'm just starting to have like pretty good success. And I look back throughout the years, and there's been a lot of work putting in it. It just feels way better now, because I can, you know, think back to how much work and in years I've put into it. Take me through how you got maybe your first deal with the first team. I believe it was with Vancouver in 2012. Just take us through that and how it kind of felt.
Yeah, I mean, so we incorporated in 2010, and we got a few teams actually off the bat. So it wasn't just like a one sales cycle that we went through, which was kind of good, but kind of bad. You know, we didn't get that breakthrough that I'm not sure if you got, but, you know, some people get that like gigantic sale that they kind of look back on as like the turning point. And I felt like every step of our business, we've had like certain turning points where, you know, we still had to like grind per se really hard, that it didn't feel like you could step back and like that was it. it was like, as soon as you brought on a client, then the real work began, right? Because then you're executing and making sure that they're, you know, happy with what they're getting, achieving their goals. You know, and now working with leagues too, we're, you know, 31 teams, 32 teams soon, you know, all over the world, trying to communicate with people to make, you know, it seamless. So for us, it was just about, you know, building a good team, founding team, recruiting. Even now, I'd say like 50% of my time is like speaking, recruiting, you know, finding the best people. I think, you know, Toronto, Ontario in general has, you know, a great, you know, Canada has a great immigration policy. We have amazing entrepreneurs in terms of like tech, all sorts of people to draw from. So ramping up to like bringing on major clients, it was like that building process of like, how can we support them and what does like success look like for them? And then, you know, pitching and getting a client, of course, it's a relief. I mean, we won some really big, I'd say like our biggest reliefs were probably like winning major business competitions in the US. Just because it was like, okay, our idea makes sense, you know? And I think that's always the entrepreneurial struggle is like, will we fall flat on our face and not make money, right? Because like the first 100,000 is hard, the first million is hard, 2 million, 3 million, you know, there's some like areas where it's easy to jump from 5 to 10 or easier to jump from like 5 to 10, like there's scale plays. But in general, those, like, as you're saying, some of those founding days, I can't imagine at 13, but some of those first days, they're tricky, right? And it's, you know, it's a lot to build up your staff and your expertise to like really make those sales and be able to like over exceed expectations on the back end.
Did you guys hear how she was talking about 3 mil, 4 mil, 5 mil? Like, it was nothing. I love it. That's awesome, Megan. Good. That's great. I think it's a you know, great idea, and it's a great company, and it is definitely going to be a part of the future of sports, especially in hockey. But you know, the women's game is on the minds of a lot of people right now. For me personally, it's like a no-brainer that there should be one league with the best of the best. And, you know, because I think it would just be very entertaining to watch. I always thought women's hockey is more entertaining than a lot of other women's sports out there. But what needs to be done to get to that point, and how hopeful are you that it will happen pretty soon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really hopeful, and I would agree with you. You know, there's some women's sports that I absolutely love to watch, like, and obviously tennis, the women make a lot of money, they do really well, there's a lot of eyes on them. Same with golf, right? It's like super popular, LPGA. Like we were talking about, the WNBA has worked with the NBA for a long time. And I think they're 25 years is this year. So that's a, you know, that's a quarter of a century. Like they're hanging on. And the Women's Olympic event is, I think NBC said it was one of like the most watched of the last Olympics in that time slot. So like the audience is there, right? Everyone knows. I had so the panel this morning, Hillary Knight was on my panel, and everyone was like, oh, Hillary Knight, amazing. You know, Megan. It's true. Like they're legitimate superstars, but then they get out of those Olympic years and it's like, who's funding them? What are their sponsors? And not just like the top, you know, 2%, you want to see all the women succeed that are Olympic athletes, they're professional athletes, they train hard, they want that to be their full-time job. How that happens, I think maybe looking to soccer, like the NWSL has done a really good idea of like getting these, you know, high net worth individuals. A lot of the women's soccer professional players are pitching in, buying teams, funding teams. Serena Williams' family is like funding, you know, the Los Angeles Angels, or, and, you know, there's just a lot of like money flowing into it. And I think we need to do the same with the women's hockey, is, you know, structured in a way that people really want to invest in it. And I think it's already clear that hockey is like an awesome game for both men and women, right? It just translates really well on the women's side. They're fast, like Kendall Coyne flies, right? Like, you know, I think that kind of blew people's mind at the All-Star, but people that watch women's hockey knew that, right? It was not a surprise that she's speedy. So
I thought that was an amazing moment for eye opening for people who, like, you know need that attention, you know. And I just hope that the women's game doesn't fall into the same trap as the men's game has. And I'll say it like this. And, you know, when I saw that that happened at the All-Star and they had the four women go up there, I said, this is great. And everybody was excited about it. But I said, you missed an opportunity here. And a lot of people didn't understand what I was saying. And I'll say it to you. You had four women represent, you know, two represented Canada, two represented America, and they're all white women. And I said to myself, you've got an Indigenous woman and a Black woman that play for Team Canada. If you had to put an Indigenous woman, Black woman, and two white women from the men, that would have blown the roof off of everywhere, because now you can have that conversation of the diversity and inclusion. And my one fear about when we get to this women's game is how they're going to market it. And if they go with the route of, we're going to market it with the dominant amount of, you know, who's in the game right now, which is more white girls than Black girls or Asian girls, then I think they're gonna lose a huge opportunity. And I don't know what you think about that, but that's one thing that scares me about the women's game.
Yeah, I think so too. And like being a Toronto Raptors fan, right? I go to the Raptors and it's just so diverse, the crowd, oh, yeah. Right? Like everyone's involved. It just like Toronto all comes together, all communities, all walks of life. And then you go to a Maple Leafs game and it's not the same, right? It's just not.
And I tell people, I tell people all the time, I said, if you want to know what Toronto looks like, go to a Raptors game. You go to a Leafs game, then you're going to see what.
Yeah. I watch the Leafs on TV. I go to Raptors games. There's a reason, right? And yeah. And I think that that's, you know, a glaring problem. Like even as an executive, you walk into that building, how do you solve this? And you have people like Sarah Nurse, who, you know, it's really nice to see her get more airtime on Sportsnet because mm-hmm. her whole family's a superstar. Like, yeah. Tia Nurse, I've never had someone break down basketball better than her. You know, right. Like the NCAA tournament she did was like magical. And she's like watching three games and explaining everything. And to me, it's like, those are the people that you want front and center, not only for diversity, but just as absolute, you know, amazing representatives of what Toronto is, right? What Canada is, what we aspire to be. So I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, some people get lazy and just, you know, default to what they think might sell. But what is selling? You know, you want to extend your audience, right? If you just have all white men, white women, you know, corporate, it's boring, right? Mm-hmm. Like you already have them. You know, you need to think differently of how to capture different audiences.
So your brother was already the GM of the Coyotes, and I'm sure he brought what you guys did with your company to the team. Do you ever see you switching to that part and
join? She wants
that?
To be the she doesn't want to be
I know she wants to be the owner, but she seems like she's got all the knowledge and could handle a team and maybe do even a better job than what your brother did.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to answer this for her. You know, in the West Indies, they would say that's small things. She's trying to go for the bigs. She's trying to get that ownership.
Well, and I think that goes back to your question about like, you know, what you do with the team or what you do, you know, when you're the GM too, you still have owners that are your bosses, you have presidents, you have layers on top of you. And I think when you own a company, you start being able to make different decisions, right? And have that power. And I think, you know, when you don't see diversity in the executive rooms, I think boardrooms are like maybe 10 to 20% like board of directors mm-hmm. in terms of any diversity. In Canada. So that's a problem when you're always, you know, looking at decisions from one perspective or how to reach people or how to market, you know, your team and such. So I think GMs, you know, have really cool jobs and do a lot of great things. Is it all I aspire to? No. Could I probably handle it? Probably. And I work with a lot of GMs. I like them. You know, I like what they do. But I like working with a lot of them. So I feel like that's the weird thing. Like when you're with a team, you kind of live and die with them, right? What's that one saying is like, you win and it's like, you know, the best and you lose, you know, they're always in heaven or hell, right? These right. teams. So I kind of take the, like, I hope everyone has fun. I hope it's like a 3-3 game. Both goalies play well, you lose in a shootout, you know, that's my perspective on hockey.
Yeah. You touched on this a little bit, but I want to ask again, maybe you have a little bit more to expand on it, but how does the women's movement in hockey not fall into the trap of not being diverse like the male hockey workforce is?
Yeah, I mean, that's really tricky too, right? Because it's just like so easy when you have people that are leading it that are predominantly white executives have that perspective. I think it's easier to probably ask you, right? How do you think that women's hockey could avoid that? Like you said, there are some great Indigenous players, you know, especially in Canada, that's a core component of the North. A lot of these communities, play hockey. So it's not like there's not hockey players or hockey fans. And you see that in the NHL as well. And same, I mean, I can only list a handful, right, of Black women who are playing hockey too. So how do you change that dynamic and get more people enrolled and involved and, you know, push the game forward from that side where it's not just a numbers game where you put out one or two people here and there to market, but you truly have, you know, a prevalent group that's pushing certain communities to not only engage, but like really love the game and feel included and, you know, feel like they are not only accepted, but like really wanted as fans. Mm-hmm.
I think to answer that, from my perspective, they have to start with the content part of it, the promotion of it, the visualization of it, and think to the future, not to where we are right now. But, you know, who are the young girls, the minority girls that are coming up that are highly skilled that could potentially become stars in the future? And how do we take those girls and give them the all access to hone their skills and take it to that next level? Because, you know, I just did this thing with Angela James and her brother Leo and TSN, and it was about Angela, and they brought all these girls that Angela is coaching, and it was all Black girls. It was like I think it was about like 15 of them, and they were all high level. So to me, it's like, if you look at that crop, there's got to be at least five or six that are highly skilled girls. So now if you take that, if you take them and inspire them to know that there's something in the future, then you've got something to look forward to. So, I mean, I think it really starts with the marketing of the game. And even if there's very few women of color playing at that high elite level, you've got to give them just as much credence as you would do the Hillary Knights and all these other all the other high athlete women in the game of hockey.
Yeah. How about on the sponsorship side? How do you think that they play a role in that?
Huge. I mean, you know, if you think about some of the commercials they make, I know I watched a commercial that Sarah Nurse was in. It was her and her father. I won't mention the company, but it was her and her father, and they were talking about, you know, playing in hockey and being inspiring. And there was not one girl of color in that video. And I was like, that's where you missed the point. Yeah, you've got Sarah, but if you don't show these young girls, then you're defeating the purpose. I talked to Ron McLean about this when they have, hometown hockey, or they have, you know, at the beginning of the show, and they have all the young kids that are saying, oh, tonight on the show, we've got Vancouver versus Montreal. Well, if you have a team like that, and it's predominantly white, but you have two or three minority kids, you have to make sure that one of those minority kids is one of the kids speaking. And when they have their panel for hometown hockey, you've got to purposely go out and say, okay, we've got a boy and a girl here. Why don't we have one white boy and one Black girl represent their teams and have them representing? Because now other kids are seeing this and they want to inspire to be that, or to know that, well, this space is in it for me as well as anybody else. I think about these things a lot.
Right, because they're not exactly like quick fixes either for people that are executives that have been in those positions for a very long time, right? Yeah. And I think that goes back to like MLSC. I think they just had a diversity and inclusion hire, as I want to say they're even in like the C-suite level. So very high level in terms of doing that. How do you think that, not that this is my interview now, but I'm like curious, because this is something that, you know, I get, you know, asked about, obviously being a woman in sports. But I think, you know, there are obviously other demographics that are really left behind. So like, how do you think that diversity inclusion from like a business perspective or hiring, you know, one or two people or a few people directly thinking about these all the time, do you think that could like shift the dial, or is there more that they have to do?
No, I think that's totally right on the nail, because, you know, when you're in a company and you're speaking on, you know, events that you want to participate in, if you want to say, okay, it's February, Black History Month, how do we execute X, Y, and Z? How do we be a part of that? And you look inside your office and you're trying to get some answers and nobody in there is from the Black community. How can they answer that? It's just like when you have, if you're doing Gender Equality Month, okay, how can a group of men, regardless of what their color is, tell us as an audience what we should be watching about women? Like, you have to have a woman in there to speak about it. So I think that as long as these companies start to hire more people of color, genders, race, whatever it may be, then they're going to be able to solve their problems and answer their own questions, because you're going to have somebody to look to. I've had hockey teams call me and ask me about, you know, hey, what do you think about this idea for Black History Month? Or, hey, Kwame, do you have any ideas? And I'm glad to help them. But I think I always think to myself, well, if you had somebody of color working for you, you could ask them, why are you asking a guy in Toronto? You know what I mean? Yeah. You could ask somebody in your own company. So that's how I kind of see it.
Yeah. And it's not just like a 1 month thing either too, right?
Yeah,
like,
no.
It should be a 12 month sort of, you know, to push that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Call me. How long were you waiting to get this off your chest, man?
Oh, man. Jeez. I've been crazy. Waiting for the right guest.
I just asked the question, though. So, no, it was a great answer.
No, yeah. I just think about it a lot.
So, call me. We're gonna end your interview now, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Back to Megan here. I read somewhere that you filmed, you started off filming your brother's games in the OJ to help him out. What exactly was analyzed, and what do you think your brother benefited like the most out of that experience?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So kind of to back that up, he was going to go the college route. So that's why he was playing out in New Brunswick. And, you know, I was going to school there in finance. So it was just sort of a, you know, it just happened that way that I would go to his games every time, pick him up from practice, whatever. And the coach didn't like their video coach for whatever reason, wasn't around. So I started to just help on that side just because I was there anyways. And I'm like kind of a busybody. So that's how I originally realized, like, there's not a lot of stats in hockey. Like in basketball, I would have all sorts of different metrics, even as like a 17-year-old girl, right? So I started to try like tag more things in a very like remedial software that I think some video coaches still use. But for me, I was like, this can be a lot better, you know, and knowing from what I learned in like school, and I was already in university at that time. So just, you know, talking to some of my professors about software and like, what was it, you know, able to accomplish. That's sort of how I started to thread the needle a little bit in terms of like my own understanding of the gaps in hockey and what to do. So I'd say at that time, this is like 14, 15 years ago. He probably didn't benefit at all from me. Thank goodness my skill set has improved, but for sure, I think all those experiences, even now working with like junior hockey teams and young players, you know, I've lived that life. Like I've lived like the, you know, been a billet essentially, right? We even had one of his defensemen live with us as well. So it was a really fun life where I think, you know, you don't have a lot of worries in terms of junior hockey. You're just focused on playing. And I kind of miss that too from now, you know, the more higher stakes of, let's say, NHL players. But that's a long answer for saying, yeah, I have come a long way in a decade and a half.
Megan, you've been a guest speaker at so many different events and conferences over the year. How important is it for you to be like a role model and inspire young women?
You know, I don't really think of it that way just because, you know, I think if you're always trying to be a role model, sometimes it doesn't work out too, right? Like people are human. People make errors. People make mistakes. I think it's just trying to be the best version of yourself, sticking to your morals and values, you know, living your life as best as you can, and not just listening and learning, but having action too. So I try to take something from everyone I learn from. It was great to hear the answers today too, because I'm taking a lot from this already in terms of, you know, diversity and inclusion. So I think for me, the most important thing is to like grow as an individual. But I also believe in like, and maybe this is not the best business practice, but I like being nice. Like, I feel like there's some sort of karma in the universe where, you know, you're a good person, you'll attract good people. And sure, you might not, you know, win every deal or get the most money. But for me, that's sort of the standard that I like to operate on as well.
So you're more than just an analytics girl. I mean, you have your own personality and your own personal brand. What do you think your favorite part about having such a big platform is?
I honestly just kind of started the platform because I felt really misunderstood, right? And I feel like it's so easy, especially with women, you know, we talk about like their appearance or we talk about certain, you know, elements of them, and we're not as interested in like, you know, what they want to accomplish or goals or their background or university. So I try to like sort of break down like what I go through during the day. And like, if I'm traveling or if I'm doing conferences, what that looks like or prep, and just being a bit like authentic and open with people. And obviously like social media is very curated. I think, you know, there's like challenges in that too, in terms of you don't want to look like you have this like cookie cutter life and there's like never problems. And, you know, I talk about failure a lot too. And I'm sure, you know, you had some road bumps, right? Starting your company. It's not always like, oh, you're just going to like build it and everyone comes, right? There's, you know, there's things that don't work out or ideas you had that you love and you think are great, but like no one else does. And that's entirely possible, but like that iteration and learning experiences is like what can make you really powerful, make you really strong in business too. So I just try to like power through in terms of, you know, when I don't get something or when something goes wrong, and, you know, try to be as transparent as I can without, you know, feeling like I overshare either. So I do like not look at my mentions. I do not try not to Google myself or like, you know, read what certain people think or don't think about me, because I think what other people think about yourself is none of your business. You know, it's how you are and, you know, how good you are to your family and friends and your values.
Yeah. I've had to learn that the hard way, not to, you know, during certain months or certain things, it's just like, don't look at social media because it's going to kill. And I mean, and I think, you know, for you, it must be kind of hard too, because you want people to take you serious. And I mean, this world, people look at like a pretty woman that's doing something very high tech and they're just like blown away. It's just like, you know, having Akil and Elijah here, you know, when we decided to have you on the show, I didn't know how to control these two. I mean, I said, boys, let's be professional about this and stop fighting about who is going to invite her on the show. But no, just kidding.
I'm a fan of both. So I'm very happy to be here.
Okay. So then before we get into our last question, which is our top five, you've seen these two play. I need you, if you can, break down Akil's game and break down Elijah's game. Can you do that?
Well, that's a tough, you should have asked me to prep beforehand.
I should have asked you to prep.
We look at like 20,000 players, you know, so it's a lot of data that we have. I will say though, memorable, Akil, of course, Niagara, super proud of your goal at the World Juniors. You know, this is, sorry to make this another question to you, but what was that feeling? Was that like an out of body experience, or were you just like, got it, this is my, you know, you just like had that momentum and just got it done, or what was that like?
It's a combination of a lot of things. Like, I grew up as a little kid watching the World Juniors every year. So even playing in the World Juniors was kind of like a dream come true itself, like kind of the same level as playing in the NHL, to be honest. So even just being able to play in that game, it was like surreal. And like that in itself was like unbelievable feeling. And then obviously playing the game, like it's just like, it's super emotional, it's super nerve wracking. And then I wasn't like really playing that much. So like, I was just hoping that I would get an opportunity. So when I got a shift, it was kind of like, okay, wow, like I have a chance. And then I did that, and it was just like this, like, I guess the feeling was just like, this can't be true. Like, this didn't just happen. So I didn't really know how to feel. It was just crazy. I've never really felt that way. It just felt like a joke, to be honest. And then, obviously got back on the bench, and, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. My computer freeze, but, just got back on the bench, and I remember just like kind of freaking out over like there still being 3 minutes left. I was just like, I need this game to be over right now. They can't tie this up because I'm not getting another shift. So like,
yeah, that's awesome. No, we were all cheering for you for sure. So that was a pretty proud moment for Niagara. And of course, Elijah, you're awesome too. So great story.
So, okay, listen, I'm not going to put you on the spot to analyze both of their games, but will you promise to come back on the show?
100%. I will have the full scouting report if I come back on the show.
I hope I did get enough to be allowed back on.
I think we got to wait till I'm playing forward.
Wait till you're playing forward, then you're going to, okay, either or. But yes, no, Megan, you've been great. I think this is probably one of my most fun interviews just because of, like, you know, hearing about your company and what you're doing in the hockey world is amazing, and you sound like you know exactly what you're doing, and I can't wait to see how big it will be. But we cannot let you go without your top five, and the reason being is because, you know, we always want to bring some flavor to everybody here, and we need to know what top five songs Megan would listen to maybe on the way to a huge meeting. You're about to pitch the company to another, like Vegas Golden Knights or something. And
I love Vegas.
And you're driving to the arena. Yeah. Maybe five songs that you want to listen to get you hyped up before you get into this meeting.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I, you know, liking so many sports too, I listen to so much different music. So I'm kind of that crazy person that like Spotify hates. Like, they don't know what to recommend to me.
Right.
So how about I start with number five? Let's just go with DMX, Rough Riders Anthem, because I feel like that's the day, you know, have to bring that in. And also, like, very good basketball anthem, too.
Okay.
Then I would go to, like, a Bob Cajun, maybe, Tragically Hip. I think that's a super Canadian answer that Americans never understand, but it's, like, very much into hockey here. Then, like, very cheesy, I listen to, like, Taylor Swift, Shake It Off. I think, you know, if the meeting didn't go well, that would be what I would bring up. Also, like, Dua Lipa, Levitating. She's awesome.
Okay.
And we'll end it with Drake, Hotline Bling, because that's just an essential for Toronto.
I love it. I love it. Boys, do you approve?
I mean,
yeah, I approve.
Breaking it down. Megan, thank you so much. If anybody wants to follow what you're doing and your business, where can they go on social media, or how can they learn more about StatLeads?
Yeah, for sure. So at Megan Chaika and at Hockey Analytics, at StatLeads, either three of them, I'm, you know, pretty present on most platforms and at a lot of conferences. So feel free to reach out. Don't be scared. You know, I always take calls and copies with as many people as I can. So, you know, happy to chat with anyone interested.
And don't be talking greasy, people. Okay. You see the IG, don't talk greasy. Be nice. Okay.
How would like a player, like you said, you'd work with more than just like teams. How would like a player wanting to like do some analytics get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, email. So it's like hello@StatLeads. You can send an email to I'm Megan@StatLeads. We're all our first name at StatLeads. So anyone, we can direct them to certain departments or anything that they're interested in. For sure, work with like players and agents, especially, and trainers too, to try to figure out, you know, how to get better, look at comparable players, break down certain parts of the games. And then provide things that can help them with either their off season or if they're in a slump. You know, there's all sorts of reasons to use data to get better. So always free to chat about that as well. Love junior players, love, you know, like I said, the journey, any stage we're interested in, we just want to make people better.
Awesome. Megan Chaika, AKA Megan Chaika. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and all the best in the future.
Yeah, thank you.
That was a great guest, boys. Thoughts?
She came on and like really just killed everything that she was talking about, and like she like took over the interview too, which like we've never had happen. But it was like it was a good conversation in the way that she did it. So she's definitely like a boss, like you're saying, Kwame. Like just killed it.
You know? She's definitely a boss. Akil, how, when did you first hear about Megan?
I don't know. I think I just kind of saw her account on Twitter a couple of years ago, or heard about her just because she's from Niagara. And like, there's a couple like at Brock, like it's a huge sports management school. So like, I'm pretty sure like my friends who go to Brock kind of told me about her and said like they follow her or whatever, and she's doing pretty big things. So I remember seeing her at one of the games or something like that. It was just like one of those things where you can't really explain like how she's from Niagara and heard about her. So yeah.
Yeah, I thought she was amazing, and I I'm gonna start paying attention more to statistics in the game, and definitely have to keep an eye out on stat leads. And I hope everybody out there enjoyed this episode. Once again, please subscribe, rate, and review, and make sure you hit us up on all of our social media platforms. And we're dedicating this episode to the one and the only DMX. He is going to be missed. He's definitely will always be loved. And Elijah Roberts, Akil Thomas, my name is Kwame, and we are out. Bong, bong.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting. With myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power. Statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table. It's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie. Progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They solar show and Nola. They live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali. He changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee. It's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
Let's dedicate this one to Jade and Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinta. Or maybe you prefer that Benz, why? That big truck, I don't give a f***. Only really want a house where they get fired. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the pass from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. We young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. When our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice. Nice.
ice.